Back to order. Okay. Continue.
Okay, let's continue. So now for the mud throwing on the wall part with the strategies. Okay. So these are just some ideas for strategies. We can go through them one by one like we've done in the past and tweak them, change them, add strategies. So under that first goal, these are some potential strategies. Continuing the use of the county density bonus program.
So that's like the cluster density, the multifamily density bonus.
Yep. Yeah. Is that program working? Does it need expanded anywhere? We did hear something from, I think it was a focus group, about potentially scaling it for east versus east and west, not versus east and west.
I don't know. I'm not a commissioner. My thought would be is not just continue it, but look at ways to improve it.
Okay, yep.
I mean, I don't know that the fees associated with it are to the point where they're not cost effective, and they're probably not cost effective on the western side. So, I mean, it seems like it's a good thing. I mean, but it probably could be improved upon. I don't know. I'll throw that out for conversation sake.
I'm just curious, where is the money that comes from it going?
Way the ordinance works now is it goes into a fund administered by the county, and with the cooperation with the Sussex County Land Trust, but it has to be spent on land within the same watershed, which is kind of an unusual term, but it was used to keep it geographically more or less in the same place where the bonus density was going.
Has that happened at all?
Yeah, it has.
I think once.
It happened.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, there's been money transferred. I don't know how it's been used to date. I don't know. It was like $1.2 million.
Yeah, we got for governors or one of those.
I just saw they put $1 million.
There's a considerable delay between
between
when it's asked for or whatever, and right now it's based on site plan.
Final
site plan is recorded, the check has to be written, and so there's a considerable delay between point A and point B. But this is more of a conservation element discussion that has to be vetted there. And I think that this is one of those, I think for the time being we should leave it. But we might want to put a star next to it to see how the conservation element recommends handling both this bullet and the next one, and then come back to it.
Okay, so we'll leave it for now. We can come back after we do the in-depth discussion on conservation.
Yeah. I would just add, just so we don't forget, mm-hmm. and add something about it and look at ways to improve it.
Right, so evaluate it for effectiveness or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just so for your benefit, Kim and some of the other commissioners, the reason it comes at the end is we went through how is this going to work with those bonus density payments, and you can't have it up front because you don't know what your ultimate real density is going to be till you get to the very end, after it goes through the grist mill of, us and state agencies, and then there may be design changes and everything else. You don't have a final number till the very end of it, so that's why those payments come at the end.
Yep, I'm fine with that. Yeah. I'm just curious.
Okay. I think
the money just being sitting around, looking nice somewhere else.
The strategy is twofold. It's future land use related with the fact that you're using it to encourage density in certain areas, and then it's also conservation related too, with the open space preservation.
And honestly, to Marty's point, I think it has to stay somewhere because otherwise we'd have to look at deleting it out of our code too.
Well, I mean, when we get to the conservation element, I'm going to argue that we expand it, but
yeah.
that's a different discussion
for
today.
Right.
So we'll just have to come back to it. I mean, this is our first visit on future land use. We recognize that we're going to have other work to do and come back. So.
Yep. Okay. So the next one, Marty, you had suggested tabling it, but we'll just talk about it really quick. Development of incentives such as transfer development rights to direct growth to core growth areas. In the TDRs, the transfer development rights, it's talked about a lot in this chapter in your 2008 plan. So I don't know if we want to talk about that today. I know it overlaps with conservation, but it also is a land use tool.
To my view, Alexis, let's see what the conservation element does, because that's where that was born out of, and just see if it stays in or whatever. I think we had one citizen that thought he had some ideas about that, so.
So how well have we defined core growth areas?
core growth area, the word core, I don't know that's actually in the, it's just more the growth areas, and mm-hmm. that goes back to the 03 plan. That's a defined term mm-hmm. within the plan.
The core is defined in the
area. No.
Just growth areas.
Yeah. Core is not used, to my knowledge, really anywhere. It's growth mm-hmm. areas or not growth areas.
Because that's what caught my attention, which I've never seen a core growth area.
Good catch.
Yeah, we'll take that word out.
And I would capitalize growth areas if we're going to keep that in the plan, because sure. that's actually a...
So strike core. And,
yep, got it.
Good catch. There you go.
All right, consider development of a commercial plan development ordinance that requires a review and approval of a site plan at the same time as a zoning change is proposed. This came up a couple times through focus groups, the interviews.
Yeah, we're doing that, so I would leave that one in.
Yep.
So.
Okay, good.
But there's one new catch on this.
Uh-oh.
A rezoning becomes a land right, but we are going to retire the site plan if no action is taken after 5 years. How are you going to reconcile these two?
Perfect.
Well, you can tie them together.
Yeah, and I don't know, for strategy's sake, we need to get that far into the weeds. So,
okay.
That would be the ordinance.
Yeah. Because, mm-hmm. that's what we just did yesterday.
But that's what you have to do. You have to make sure they go together.
That means you're going to retire zoning.
Well, we do
it. Yeah, would it be the same as like RPC?
Same thing as an MRRPC.
The way we do that is they come in and request a rezoning, we grant it, and then it stays forever. With this, which is Mr. Wheatley's idea, so he better explain it, is that they come in and we grant the rezoning, but if they don't follow up, it gets retired.
All good.
Yeah, right.
All good,
but
5 years, so not on existing.
Or 5 years or whatever.
It wouldn't impact existing.
Yeah. Okay, so we're good leaving it as is, and the specifics will be defined by planning and zoning as they actually develop the ordinance, which is outside of the comp plan. Revise the zoning code for commercial districts to include sub-districts, defining types of commercial uses. That's currently underway.
So,
Yeah, so leave it in there.
Great.
Well, just on that, though, what the commission, because this has sort of been a discussion we've had behind the scenes timing-wise, because Kyle Gabronson and AECOM, because these folks have enough to work on with the comp plan, he's working on that. We've got so much going on, but at some point we're going to have to tie that in to the plan, because when we get to that table of district uses or whatever it's called, we're going to need to either know we're doing those or not, you know, because if we're going to make all those sub-zoning districts for commercial uses, they need to show up in that table.
I was under the impression that the county council was marching forward with that.
And no, it's true, you know, and then we accelerated this, so I guess look for it this summer, probably.
Well, I mean, we won't get finished until the end of June.
They should dispense with that before we're done.
Don't look at me like that.
Well, it's got to come back to you guys, too.
You're kind of running concurrently at this
point. Doug just looked at me and said, the end of June, man?
So know that that's coming, and so there's going to be some gaps in some of this, particularly, you know, that we're going to have to leave placeholders for, with that.
Well, maybe we need to see if we can push the glacier a little bit faster,
Well, and that's fine, too. There's just... We've got meetings every Wednesday and Thursday, and that's going to probably be maybe a public hearing all into itself, you know. So it's just making sure that there's not too much on everybody's plate. That's all.
We're going to get a pension by the end of this year.
All right. Anyway, just a comment. We'll keep that going then.
Yeah, we're considered part-timers.
Yep.
Okay. This, I think, might have come out of a focus group or the interviews. Consider waiving requirements and fees for downzoning to AR.
I mean, I don't know where this came from, but, you know, do you have any darts or anything that we could throw at?
This one would be one where...
Just throwing that on the wall, Marty.
Yeah.
Like, well, if somebody wanted to...
Do you have a power washer?
Or if they wanted to go from, you know, a GR to an MR. So it's really that downzoning is, you know... Do we want to encourage... This is what it's talking about. If you're going from HR, GR, CR, to the AR.
To the AR, yeah.
Not going from the AR to something else, but actually rezoning to AR.
Is there a fee required, though?
Yeah, it's a rezoning.
Yeah, it's a rezoning application.
So it's always a fee, but what we could say is...
It's over-the-counter.
Down zone for free.
But just consider. It's just the words consider here.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
Okay.
Some more potential strategies under the second goal. Okay, so these are some of the things we sort of hit upon earlier, but we can talk about now. Options for planning such as creation of special development districts to help fund infrastructure improvements for off-site infrastructure such as roads and intersections, considering impact fees to fund construction of adequate supporting infrastructure.
What does that mean exactly?
Okay, so the special development district is a geographic area that's defined.
Right.
And
like a special tax district?
Yeah.
Or it could be a TID.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the council's looking at TIDs, and they're going to come back through at some point.
I mean, we should really say it because it speaks to roads and intersections. We should really call it what it is. Consider creation of.
What was my point?
Well, this also leaves the opportunity to do other types of districts, not just strictly the TID. Mm-hmm. Again, the TID can be that much more specific that comes out of this, but it leaves it broad enough if there's some wild, other crazy mud on the wall that comes out of it to consider.
Yeah, and I mean, there have been, I know in the Bridgeville at Heritage Shores was a special tax district in the town of Bridgeville.
And it's called a special development district.
Yeah, special development district. Trust me, there's a tax involved somewhere. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it was something that it's a tool.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tool. I'm not sure it's a great tool.
I mean, is that what led to Heritage Shores being built? I think
Pretty much. That's how it got done. The people in Heritage Shores are paying for the infrastructure that was put in for Heritage Shores. Over a period of, 40 years or whatever, it's just added to their tax bill.
Mr. Councilor, how does the code define infrastructure, county infrastructure?
That's just a general term. I don't know that that's a defined term.
I don't know that it would have to be limited to county infrastructure.
Yeah, I mean, county infrastructure would be basically sewer.
I mean, county infrastructure could also be emergency medical services.
Oh, right, true.
It's just another way to pay for something, really. I mean, in my mind,
because the intent, again, is for the strategies is to be a bit broad and then have multiple different ways to implement a strategy. So you're not really locking yourself into, oh, it has to be an ordinance or it could be something else. This an infrastructure can be many different types of infrastructure.
It says one thing, I was actually thinking another. I wasn't thinking so much about the creation of districts, but the ability to create a district. Because typically, very limited experience with special development districts is that they're very specific. And we don't know where they're going to be. Isn't this normally something that happens when someone has an idea and they want to achieve something in a particular place, and then you create the district for the need? You don't create the district first and then go find somebody to
generally
to build it.
Mm-hmm. And it has to be directly related. Mm-hmm.
So I think it's the ability or the mechanism that needs to be considered, mm-hmm. not the creation of the district itself, but to consider implementing an enabling ordinance to create those districts, but not to create the district itself, because who knows where they are.
And the Title IX in the state code already allows the Sussex County to create a number of special districts.
Correct.
But they're petition driven of existing residents versus, if does this envision driven by growth versus existing customers?
And I think that's what we're talking about, is growth driven rather than by existing. In other words, it's proactive and not reactive.
Okay. Right. So if you look at that, the Kent Code has that provision in it for infrastructure where the county can team up and create these kind of interactions.
If you want to see, I'm just thinking again, and Bridgeville is a good example. In order to get development in places like that, in central and western Sussex County, you might need this as a tool. Mm-hmm. In order to make that happen, and it's created the district is created at the, I don't say the developer's risk, the risk being that if they decide to go that way, everyone who lives in there is going to be paying an additional tax, and that's going to be something that a buyer will have to consider when making a buying decision. So I guess there's sort of a marketing risk to the developer if he does that. But given the current tax structure in our county, it certainly hasn't hurt Bridgeville. I mean, it certainly hasn't hurt Heritage Shore. They are building to beat the band in that place. So, you know, that doesn't seem to be a problem. But it's a way maybe to spread some of that development out. Maybe it'll take some of the pressure off the east side if there were ways for people to do things. And this might be a way, because the sewer, especially the county sewer, isn't going to be, it isn't near as prevalent on the west side. And if the county sewer by its nature and its funding mechanisms is reactive, it's not really going to be there either. So they have to find some other way to do it. Not going to be there ahead of time.
It is not a secret that the county is working on the Western Sussex sewer solution with Bridgeville, Greenwood, and Seaford.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If it becomes a reality, then there would be sewer in that corridor.
Mm-hmm.
So I think,
But to extend that sewer to a development, This would be a way to do that. Yeah.
As long as we consider, you know, some relief for affordable housing, an exemption for affordable housing, if you will, as an incentive to have developers build the affordable housing, number one, especially in the western side of the county, where it's a bigger issue, perhaps, because of the number of people that live at less than $30,000, $25,000 a year income.
Do we, you know, that brings up a point, and none of the goals or objectives, was there any discussion of affordable housing? Does that come out in any of the strategies that we have yet, or no?
It's not in future land use, but it would be in housing, but okay. We can put in future land use if you think it would be
overlapping. We probably ought to remember to weave that back in as we go forward.
Yeah, as I read the book, I just finished it this morning, actually, that the affordable housing report.
Oh, the impact of communities,
I'm going to say, and I studied it, don't give me a test, but... I mean, there's some, you know, half the households in Sussex County are at $50,000 and left. That's a household income. And so you're looking at a lot of people that have affordable housing issues and a full-time residence in a county. And I can't remember the number, but I thought it was around 35% were less than $35,000 a year. Well, where do you find housing, you know, that's going to take up half of your budget?
Yeah.
Well, I think if we put language in there to consider creating the mechanism or a path forward or something, again, I don't think we can create the districts themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can create a path forward to allowing them to be created by whoever desires them, what do you think, guys, ladies?
I mean, when we get into ordinance, we just have to think about that.
Well, that's what I mean. But we're, you know, yeah, we're at the 50,000 foot level here, so we want to get it on the radar screen and in everybody's thinking, and then we'll drill down to where it really happens.
Well, I mean, from 30,000 or 40,000 feet up, I mean, but impact fees for many of us is probably not a big deal, or maybe small increases in taxes are not a big deal. But when you're struggling to put food on the table, it is a big deal. And so we just can't forget about that large segment of Sussex County population.
But I agree with that. And although I do see this as being potentially helpful to the creation of affordable housing, by at least being able to make it happen and be priced in an area where you can afford it, even though your taxes might be a little higher, the total package would still be something that you know, your average person could live with, versus not having it happen at all because the development costs are too high. You know, there's no way to finance a development cost reasonably.
Okay, so tweaking the first language about considering a path forward, like Vince said, for the special development districts, what about the second one, impact fees?
And that goes to the developer, right?
And then it's often passed on to the landowner.
Well, ultimately.
I mean, everything's often passed on.
Property owner,
yeah. It comes, basically, out of the raw land value.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's only such a big pie there. But, you know, and you got to pay for infrastructure somehow. So, you know, I just, what always gives me pause is, are we paying for the same thing twice? And really, we're talking about roads primarily.
Well, I think when we think about impact fees, we think about water and sewer mostly. But,
well, you got connection fees for those, and they're designed into the system, right?
It's already
so
there.
That's not,
yeah.
It's already there.
Sewer connection charges are already in place,
sure.
And they cover the
transportation. That's what I'm saying. I don't know what other impact fees you would want to create.
That's why I was asking earlier, first of all, that the keyword county infrastructure, do we mean developing infrastructure in Sussex County, or are we talking developing the county's infrastructure? There's a big difference.
I see what you're saying.
So if it is the county's, then we really have two. We have an enterprise fund, and we're running emergency service.
Yeah. And that's what we were talking about earlier, about the difference between what the people expect when they say infrastructure. You have a state responsibility in certain infrastructures, and then you have a county's responsibility, which are covered with these two funds. The real estate transfer tax covers our emergency services, and then the districts themselves are developed and budgeted to
the operation.
What is it, 18 million?
I'm not talking to that.
Yeah, Jennings.
But I would like to see you, the board, clarify this, that you're speaking of the county-controlled infrastructure and service. Is that really what you're talking about?
No, yes. I think it's the broader picture. It's the broader picture within the county.
I think county refers to the location of the infrastructure, mm-hmm. not the ownership of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether that's right or not, but that's what I think was the writer's intention.
And Mr. Chairman, that means you would be collecting funds to turn them over.
Well, no, it doesn't actually mean that the county would be collecting funds. It would allow for a mechanism for somebody to potentially create a district to collect funds. Like if we go with the TID, the county's not collecting that funds. It goes to DLDOT to collect that funds to do the work. So it's not always the county's infrastructure. It could be a mechanism to allow for other agencies to do something like that, as well as the county to have the ability. It's both.
So we have two issues. We have the issue of enabling the creation of traffic improvement districts, and secondly, enabling us to create adequate emergency services fee, because we already have a sewer connection.
Yeah, right.
Well, in the first regard of the roads, I mean, it all sounds good as long as that money doesn't get shaked around under the pea shell and just move back up to our favorite county up north. You know, you want to have real additional improvements and not just the appearance of it. And that's what I was saying. I worry about our citizens in a group, whoever's pocket it ends up coming out of, paying for the same thing twice and only getting it once.
Speaking for reiterating what the Secretary of Transportation said upon the same question, I think it was Councilman Wilson asked, and the answer was the money's collected for the traffic improvement district stay within that district.
Yeah, but we have no assurance that the match is going to get there.
We have no assurance that the match is going to get there, but without the match, there's no construction.
And there would be an agreement between the county and the state for for that specific. So if a TID does go forward, there is an agreement between Delta and the county on that instance. But this is just looking holistically at a TID as being one option, and whether or not something like that would make sense.
Somebody's trying to dial into the computer system. It happened yesterday during council, too. We couldn't figure out what it was.
Interesting.
Somebody's trying to FaceTime us. I don't know.
Does this have anything to do with, too, how they're decided? And what I mean by that is, I know that some people, when they've come to build something, have been told, well, you need to change this road, realign this road, and then all the way down 10 miles, you need to go put in two lights. And the next guy who comes in to put in a development, they're like, well, could you put a turn lane in? And I mean, so like one guy's like, wait a minute, how come he had to do that and I had to do this?
The TID would address that because it's looking at a holistic, and it would be looking at an overall transportation infrastructure plan for improvements for the roads within that district. So it wouldn't be one person does all of this work, the next guy does this portion of work. It would be equally spread out that everybody pays their share of the overall cost of that improvement.
That's the advertised advantage of it. Okay. So far, though, nobody's really done a very good job of describing how it's going to work in real life. Okay. What everyone is concerned about, or what many folks who are going to be on the paying end of that are simply this, that they're going to collect money in advance of the construction of the improvements, okay? At what point will the improvements be done? When will the match funds show up? Where will the funds be kept in the meantime? Will the funds be kept in the district, like in a branch bank in that district where anybody who has put money in there can go look at it anytime they want to? I seriously doubt it. But, you know, that's my concern with that. And if the match funds don't show up, there's no construction. Well, how do you think those people who have paid that tax all those years and put all that money in, what are they going to think about that? You know?
Mr. Chairman? Paraphrasing the secretary.
Understood. I know. And I'm not attacking you, by the way.
I'm just being emphatic because it's my nature.
Ms. Cohen said that the well-functioning TID, which she pointed to, the one in Newcastle in the Middle Penn area, LDOT has actually pre-funded some of the activities. She indicated that the state's match, was well ahead of contributions. This may be specific to this particular
case. Well, that's good to know.
It's the Middletown TID, because that's the one that's truly functioning in the state.
I've been messing with the state of Delaware all my life. We all have, right? So how do you know that match didn't come in Sussex County's place? You got Hennepin TID, right? And they've got to come up with match money. So they just say, well, we'll delay this capital project on the western side in order to free up the match money. So you've got no new money. All you've done is delay a project from one area in the county to fund the TID. I do not trust state government finances because we're 50 years behind in road improvements that were planned for.
Right, and there's a very intense, lengthy contract that the county would have to enter into agreement with the state that would address, my understanding, all of these issues.
I'm correct this. As the open issues of the TID was governance, the county has the option to assume governance. So if we have that concern, we can take charge and assume that we will govern the TID.
That means we do the project.
We do the project, we collect the money, we hold the money in the local branch bank where the chairman can go check it out and make sure it's in the lockbox. Like that assumes that we have the ability to do so.
Well, we're kind of back down in the strategies area here. We need to get back up out of the weeds and
I think we're a little off topic. Yeah. Just a little bit off topic.
Yeah. And it's my fault. I'll take the blame for that.
The objective of the strategy, the point of the strategy is just that the county would consider the option of using this planning tool.
I think it should be in there, and it shouldn't be code for just a traffic improvement district. It should also be for any other kind of special tax district, special assessment.
So we'll just say special development and tax districts.
Yeah, or development district if you don't want to say tax, but.
Just special development, like the way we have it.
You might as well be open.
But you might as well say it, because that's what it says to me. And that's what it is, and we shouldn't pretend it's anything else other than that, but it could be a very effective tool.
Yes, so it's just considering it as a tool.
We should consider having it available.
Yes.
Creating a mechanism for it.
You got it.
Okay, good, moving on.
And the impact fees, we'll still consider those too?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, next one. Some potential strategies, reviewing cluster development regulations to account for factors that strengthen natural resource protection, such as the contiguity of open space between developments. So maybe taking a second look at the cluster regs to see if they can be improved.
Well, they need to be improved, because right now it's a mess the way the process is.
Okay.
I mean, regardless of the substance, the way it's currently worded, it's hard to track through.
To say improve cluster development regulations.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that review.
Yeah, review.
We all know they need to be improved, so.
Are you okay having the specificity of the rest of that
strategy?
I think it's broader than that, so just leave it as improved cluster regulations.
For improvement, yeah.
So the specificity of that would be the subsequent three sub-bullets?
No, it would be the ordinances.
No, it would be the ordinance. It would be further down than that. Yeah, we're.
I had the opportunity to meet with the center this morning, and the last one is certainly a point of interest for the center of innovation.
You're jumping ahead, Hans. All right, so we're gonna
uninvite you here in a second.
Move things along.
Okay, so we're just going to make that broader. Improve cluster development regulations. Is there anything you want to tack on to that, Vince, to make it?
No, that's fine.
Okay. Review density calculations to consider accounting for netting out of environmental resources from total tract size to calculate how much land is developable.
I don't like that at all. I mean, it's one thing to tell somebody they can't use their land, but to tell them they can't calculate the densities from the land they can't use seems punitive.
I will say the flip side of that would be, just to play devil's advocate, if you have land that for whatever reason is unbuildable, you know, because it's underwater or whatever, you couldn't build a house on there, why would you be able to use it for density, you know?
But if you have 6 acres and 1 acre you can build on and 5 you can't, should you be able to take that 5 and count it in how many houses you can stick on that 1 acre?
Yeah, counter argument, yeah.
However, the engineer says you have bulk standards. You have height limitations, you have size limitations, you have lot limitations, you have footprint limitations. You can give them 1,000 units per acre. As long as you have bulk standards, you're not going to get more than X. So the density is a number which scares people. But the real meat is in the bulk standards. And to your point, you know, I think you can give people these great visions of density. Janelle and I can work on the bulk standards, then they won't even come close.
Yeah, the spatial limitations cap gets hit.
But using that spatial limitation, just to take it out one step further so that you all can consider it, is that's true if you're comparing a standard subdivision versus a cluster subdivision. The spatial standards come into play much more on the standard lot subdivision because, you know, you're using 3/4 acre lots. But if you go to the cluster subdivision and say you're down to 7,500 square foot lots, then you're picking up lots that spatially you couldn't have built under the standard one because of the layout of the roads, the stormwater management, or unbuildable areas on your property. So,
but those units, I mean, here's the thing about this. Every time you do put a rule in that lowers the density somehow, no matter how it is, reducing bulk standards or whatever you do, those units just don't disappear. They're going to go somewhere else. So you push those units further out. What my argument is that if they meet the bulk standard requirements, let them build them. That prevents an additional mile of road or mile of sewer or another acre of ground being consumed because we wouldn't let them be built here. It's self-defeating.
Yeah, I'm just throwing it out there just so you all can make an informed decision, that's all.
You know, my view is if we had some kind of natural resource preservation element to balance those densities out, we're much better off to develop 5 acres versus 10 and have higher densities. We have fewer miles of roads to maintain. We have fewer miles of sewer to maintain. And we don't consume that much extra land that much faster. What hurts us is we have no natural resource preservation, so eventually you build on that land anyway because you didn't preserve it.
I have a question, a little unrelated but very related. Is there any way we can get these strategies a day or two before? Because, boom, you know, I need to sit down with somebody and kind of have them coach me through this stuff because it's I'm not.
Yeah, this meeting was. We only had 4 days between the last meeting, so this was a little accelerated. But we will try to get them out a little sooner.
Even if it's an hour before, you know, because I don't even know what the bulk density.
The bulk standards.
Bulk standards. I mean, I'm not going to. I'm not looking for that answer now. But I would like to have the benefit, maybe an hour before the next meeting, to ask some questions like that.
So we're getting rid of this one.
I don't like it in there yet. If it's the bulk standards, it should be
allowed. I see Hans's point. I mean, I'm having dealt with bulk standards myself and some of my work over the years. I agree. It's really, I don't know that it's would have that much impact on the outcome. So let's just strike that one.
With your ESDA, don't you have the option of netting out title and non-title wetlands?
Title wetlands?
Yeah. Is that done?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so this would be similar to that where you net out things.
Yeah.
And in the, if you do a cluster in the low density area, you net out 25%, 25 or 30.
Open, it depends on where it is.
So there is some netting that occurs there too, for deduction.
Yeah, so in a sense, we've sort of already considered this in some areas.
Exactly, that would do exactly that. So Marty's right. That bully can go away.
Because we've already done it. We've already done it.
Okay.
Give yourself a check.
A bonus.
Marty wants a gold star.
Jumping ahead to
next one.
Hans is
where he jumped to. Okay, working with DENRIC and the Center for Inland Bays to develop a buffer incentive program for tidal wetlands, non-tidal wetlands, and waterways.
Yeah, just before you answer that, I got a text too. Just make sure you all speak in your microphones because it's in terms of being picked up on the internet. All that.
Okay.
We ready?
Ready. Yep. Okay. So this bullet, thoughts.
I don't know whether our planning director has any input from DNRC on this particular issue of buffers, and really we're talking wetland and waterway buffers, and waterway defined as, in our code, blue streams?
Aqueous.
It would just be subaqueous lands. I didn't bring my section of code. This is just a concept.
It's an idea.
It's an idea for how it gets implemented. Is there about probably 100 different ways, but is this a concept worth pursuing as we look out towards 2045?
If I may.
You may.
This is an incentive program, another a program, again, which has to be administered, implemented, regulated, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, like it's, if you look at it, I saw another one earlier, it said quality growth. And I'd like to have you, ladies and gentlemen, start thinking about quality buffer. So what is a quality buffer?
I can tell you what I think a quality buffer is.
I can bring and show you one on my farm.
So what I'd like to, right now, our buffers, and I know that's a very touchy subject, so I'm going to be very careful. A buffer today is linear and has a depth. Right? In my opinion, a quality buffer is defined by an area.
Exactly.
This is the research that was done. I always forget the name of it.
one report I keep referring to.
Yes, there's a report that was done about, you know, looking at...
was presented to us by the Inland Bays folks several years ago.
And it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's looking at what is appropriate for that type of idea.
What it did was establish criteria for determining what a buffer should be.
But it's still, I asked this morning, it was still defined linearly.
That's a mistake.
So because, and I think we can wrap our heads around the fact that anybody has driven around, and Mr. Hopkins knows that well, we have big construction sites and we see miles of silt fence, where you never see a drop of water leave the site. So never any sediment gets mobilized, but the silt fence is still there. So how important is that silt fence at the high point versus where the water runs off on the low end? So when you look at the buffer, think of it in the same sense. I mean, like, where do you want to manage your buffers is in the critical points of where the buffer counts.
But Hans, at some point, it has to be defined linearly in order to be built, in order to be established.
Not necessarily, Mr. Chairman.
You've got to draw a line.
No, you don't. I'd hate to disagree with you. How about that? Now you're going to throw me off the board.
You can disagree with me all you want. I'm just trying to understand what you're saying. I don't know how you create a buffer without creating a buffer.
Let's just say you have a wetland area defined, right?
Yeah, okay.
So you draw, you say you have a X foot buffer. By delineating your area, you have a length times your X foot buffer in your code, which gives you an area. That's a square foot, it's a square mile, you name what it is. Now you then define where is your highest need for your buffer. That's where you put your square feet. So in the end, you net out your square feet where it gives you the biggest bang for your buffer. That means certain areas will have less width and other areas will have much, much larger width.
Right, but you're still drawing a line.
No, you don't.
So I think we're getting in. I think we're getting in the weeds. No pun intended. But we're getting in the weeds.
I understand we're getting in the weeds. But
it's not a program. It's something question. You see when it comes to you. You see that this area is allocated, and you say yes or no.
It's a site plan.
All I can tell you is that at some point, pictorially, visually, there will be something that indicates where your buffer is.
Affirmative.
That will be a line on a page.
It will be a line on a page.
Thank you. Engineers.
Yeah. So is the concept, work with
concept
or
incentivizing
consider
that.
Working with them?
That's what I thought
about
the center
of the potential creation of.
Yeah, but you see, like,
no,
I want us to establish another program, more administration, more...
it wouldn't necessarily be a program. It could be waiving fees. It could be accelerating the review process. It doesn't have to be like an actual physical, program per se.
I don't even know that it needs to be an incentive. I mean, why wouldn't we be looking at the way we establish buffers and perhaps enacting it by ordinance? What do we need a program?
Well, and that's why I don't. I think if you want to work with anybody, you need to work with the landowners when they do their geotech surveys and all that, because they're going to have the topography, they're going to have the adjacency of the waterways, and that becomes a site plan issue. And so we don't need to talk to Denmark or the Center of Inland Bays. We need to talk to the individual property owners. And I can show you a buffer on my farm. Nobody paid for it. I put it in there myself, and I must have 2 miles of ditches around my farm. There's one ditch with a buffer.
But if you create incentives, would more people do it voluntarily?
Well, I mean, that's an ordinance issue, but I'm not going to get into that. I don't have a problem with the incentive thing. I'm just saying that we don't need a program necessarily. I think we need to look at developing a site plan review process to determine whether buffers are warranted and where.
My understanding, of course, again, we're in the weeds on this, and we'll get out of it in a minute, but my understanding of what was originally proposed several years ago, it would be the developer's engineer would be the one who would have to calculate the buffer area, draw the picture, and then submit that to the Planning and Zoning Department to be verified, to be approved, that they will be the ones that do the calculating. We wouldn't do that for them. They would, and that gives them the latitude of being able to figure out, you know, where those areas need to be and how they need to vary. I mean, I think it does what you're suggesting, but it doesn't happen at this level. That might be what I think there would be some concern about, was that if we put something like that in there, are we going to be able to keep, you know, make it turn out the way we're talking about it and not some other way? So I think that's something, that's a strategy for which the implementation would be very, very important as to how that was done, because that could go horribly wrong very easily. So I think we need to be careful about how we approach it. But I think there's a way to do it that makes it better for everybody.
Well, I don't like the way it's worded now.
So what about consider working with DENREC and the Center for Inland Bays to develop a buffer?
Or just incentives for buffers instead of a program.
Or incentives or a program mm-hmm. for the rest of it. So it gives you options already in the overreaching broad strategy.
What were the words that you used, Hans? Area-based, or what was it? Instead of linear, you were saying area-based? I mean, because my sense of what was being proposed back then was that was sort of how they were getting there, by evaluating a whole series of criteria. But if we wanted to change the wording, and I don't know why we even need to name DENREC or the Center for the Inland Bays specifically. I think we need to be right. able to work with whoever we want to, whoever okay. like, who we need to work with.
We could
with,
just leave so. It as organizations.
Why do we
don't say anything? Just
okay.
say just say work to develop
consider developing
a buffer incentive program
okay.
for you know, and leave it right there at yes. this level, and then as we work our way down, as it begins to take shape, you know, the best piece of ordinance legislation we've had in a long time just came through here, and it was because all the stakeholders had a hand in creating it. And I would see this happening in a similar fashion.
You're talking about the sign ordinance, right?
Yeah. Not the sign
ordinance. No,
I'm talking
about the drainage ordinance.
Talking about the drainage ordinance. No, the sign ordinance is a good example of how not to do it. But please don't let this be lost, that we learned from that experience, okay? But although the reality is the drainage ordinance have been going on for a long time. And that's the thing. They do take, to do them right, it does take a long time. But everybody needs to be involved in that discussion, especially if something of the impact that this would have. But there are a lot of good minds out there, good engineering minds out there that know how to make this, that can help make this happen.
Okay. So we're going to make it broad. Consider developing a buffer incentive program for tidal wetlands, non-tidal wetlands, and waterways.
There you go.
Okay. Marty, I think you threw out another one, something about developing a site plan review process.
That'll be in that program.
Hans has got it.
That's part of that? Okay.
I mean, like, I think the chairman hit the nail on the head. It's,
well, if you swing the hammer enough times, eventually.
why not state in our comprehensive plan what worked for the county in a comprehensive stakeholder representative approach, you know, and that's not just make it up. But, I mean, like, this is probably one of these issues where Sussex County is very much proud of being Sussex County and doesn't want to work with the department in Dover or the Center of the Inland Bays, but I think they would, as you said, would really look towards our stakeholders, our county stakeholders, to develop something for our consideration.
Well, there you go. I would agree with that.
So you're saying expand this to
well, just yeah.
work with
the way it would come out.
Okay,
is
so
if,
it's not
if it ever moved forward, we would work with the stakeholders as we have done in the past with drainage and mm-hmm. other groups mm-hmm. to collaboratively address the situation.
Marty,
well, you can say work with.
Consider working with stakeholders and other parties to develop a buffer incentive program, blah, 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 blah. Yes.
Yeah, that's close enough.
Marty, you okay with that? Weren't you the one that was saying you didn't want it to be program because that implied new fees and employees?
Well, without getting into a long dissertation on freshwater wetlands, I'll just leave that for another day.
Okay.
Easy.
All right.
Sorry.
I think we're good. All right.
Just do a brief summary of that. I mean, when you make a definition saying my land is water, I have a problem with it.
Okay, let's move on. Okay, so this goal has to do with minimizing the adverse impacts of future development on existing development. Potential strategy here could be reevaluating the use of landscape buffers between new development and adjacent uses to determine if the buffer size is adequate and reasonable. Does it need revisited?
And this is the forested landscape buffer, just for clarification. Okay. It's the forested landscape buffer. It's the 20-foot forested landscape buffer around the perimeter of subdivisions, or in clusters, it's the 30-foot. Or in some instances, it differs depending on the cluster and the surrounding land use. So this one is just the forested landscape buffer as a potential idea.
Which is a code requirement now.
Yeah.
But why do you need to reevaluate it? What's wrong with it?
Yeah.
Does it work?
I mean, if you have two developments side by side, you end up with 40-foot of buffer. I mean, that's pretty adequate when you consider it's landscaped. Often they're bermed and everything else. It seems to be working generally. We sometimes are asked to actually get relief when you have adjoining parcels.
And
both parcel owners say, well, let's just do 20 between us, 10 foot each, because they don't see the need for the 40. So my question is, why do we need to reevaluate it if there's not a problem?
And maybe that's something that could be reevaluated, or like we see a lot of them when it's a one major subdivision, they're almost always asking for that. So maybe is there something in that code that could potentially get tweaked instead of asking for a waiver?
We do that on a case-by-case basis.
That's such a minor issue. I'm not aware.
Broke.
Not broke, don't fix?
No.
Okay.
Let me ask another way. When we had the, was there a lot of comment on this one from the public outreach?
What's that? I'm sorry?
On this one, was there a lot of comment that came out on this one?
It might have just popped up through the one or two times through the focus groups
in public. Yeah, I've not heard this one being a significant.
I agree.
The definition of buffer means you're buffering something. And what you're buffering are not compatible land uses. So once the incompatible land use turns into a compatible land use, why would I want to have, I can reach my neighbor across the side yard, and in the backyard I got 40 feet of landscape buffer with Leland cypress I don't want. So once the incompatibility goes away, why does the buffer stay? I mean, I'm wrestling with the definition. Why do I buffer against the same?
But we've had people come in where some developments don't want to look at another development.
And it created open space corridors between developments.
We are encouraging in one of the earlier goals the interconnection. So,
okay, we're in the process of reevaluating. We're not supposed to be doing that. We're supposed to be reevaluating this.
So, could it also be looking at maybe potential landscape buffers between incompatible uses? Because right now, if you have commercial, you could have a commercial between residential. Could that be something that could be reevaluated or evaluated as part of a landscape buffer?
An issue.
I don't need
case by case.
We do that on a case-by-case basis.
We've done the reevaluation now, so we can
scratch it on that one.
Yeah.
All right. So this was just a starting point for this goal. Are there other strategies you can think of under this goal that you would like to tackle?
What are the adverse impacts that we're trying to minimize? What would be some examples of?
I think, like Hans was saying, if you have incompatible land uses, you know, maybe having a buffer between them is a way to minimize the impact of.
Yeah, well, but if we follow our plan and our ordinance, we really shouldn't have incompatible land uses because our rules require us to take that under consideration.
Well, every subdivision that comes in front of us, that comes into consideration.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know how.
So you're saying the goal, we may not even need this goal?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm asking. I'm not saying we don't need it. I'm just trying to think to myself how we would.
Okay, so
what adverse impacts would we be trying to minimize?
So the objectives under that goal that we talked about earlier were provide for appropriate and adequate land uses for the location of land use types to support future population and maximize compatibility with existing land uses, which you all say you do. The second one was ensure that new development complements the character of the existing surrounding communities, which you do. So are there any strategies that you would use to continue doing those things?
Or maybe to better doing what
better
you've been
do
doing.
Those things.
Are there
But you're assuming that we're going to approve a future land use that has an adverse impact. And I guess my question is, if it had an adverse impact, why would we approve it?
Okay, we can change. Let's go back to that goal language then.
Yeah, let's just get rid of the goal and the bullet.
The goal, and what about the objectives I just mentioned?
Yeah, that objective of reevaluate land use, the one I'm looking at?
No, this is the let me strategy. Go back a second here. Let me go back to the goal objectives.
See, this, there you go. That's the, let me look at.
So here's the goal, and here are the two objectives we talked about this morning.
Yeah, the term of adverse impacts on future development, I mean, it implies that you're approving a future development that has an adverse impact, and that just doesn't make sense. We would recommend denial.
What about all the people who live next to Atlantic Concrete in Lewis? Those are two very different land uses right next to each other. So Atlantic Concrete has had to deal with all these people who said, wait a minute, you said they were going to close down next year. What do you mean? So they're having an adverse impact.
On Atlantic Concrete.
Yeah. And the homeowners, I'm sure, are saying that Atlantic Concrete is having an adverse impact on them.
And it could also be like the one gentleman discussed the chicken houses this morning. Well, the residential and the agricultural are both permitted uses. Okay. Are there ways to look at
through site plan
potential and adverse impact onto both permitted uses? Because not always are all permitted uses compatible in a zoning classification. So I think if you look at it, a bigger, broader picture, like the gentleman was talking this morning, chicken houses versus his house being right next door, is there something that should be looked at?
Well, to some extent, it is, yeah. And I understand better what you're referring to when you say adverse impact within.
But I mean, like the Atlantic Concrete, when the people built their homes there, or bought their homes, Atlantic Concrete was there. I mean,
I agree with you.
Should we solve a problem in which they created by buying a home next to them? That's their problem.
I was just getting ready to say the same thing, that we can't fix every problem. And that is a perfect example of what we can't do anything about.
Yeah.
You know, because Atlantic Concrete was there, and they have their right to be there. The homeowners are there. They have a right to be there.
But is there a way to minimize, they both have the right to be there, but to minimize the impact on both of each other? A different landscaping, different requirements to keep those houses, say you have to have more open space, so there's a larger area between those impacts so the house doesn't abut directly, the Atlantic Concrete.
Yeah, the way to minimize it is simply to show them advertising of the other 150 developments they could have purchased in.
Exactly. Let the market control that.
You can bring a horse to the trough, but you can't make them drink, for God's sakes. You know, I mean, it's not our problem. In the case of the chicken houses, I mean, the industry is self-policing to a degree. But the gentleman moved into an AR area. It says right in an AR, this is an agricultural area, you have to expect some of that when you're out there. If you don't expect the smell of manure, then you should not move in Sussex County, because right from now through about the next 90 days or 60 days, you're going to have it. If you don't like that odor, don't move here. We can't stop it. I can't mitigate it. I can't reduce the impact of it. I don't think it's government's role to solve everybody's personal decision that they've maybe made erroneously and they've discovered it after the fact.
I think
the impact on Atlantic Concrete is probably much more significant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that
the state laws still govern noise, right? State law. Dust, state law. So the new residents can still make a complaint based on state law, which impacts the existing land use.
I think the concern here is that we're establishing goals and objectives for which we have no meaningful strategies.
If we're going to have goals and objectives,
what that says
to
me is we're trying to fix something we really can't fix this way, at least doing it
But it could be continuing things that you are doing right as a strategy. It doesn't have to be fixing something.
So.
Well, that would be the strategy.
So continue what continue with the processes that are already in place.
So it could be the strategy. I think that's what we're wrestling with is we're trying to address something that we're hard pressed to address. We really can't find a good way to address. So the question would become: do we just have our strategy be to continue doing what we're doing, or do we reevaluate having this as a goal since it's?
Well, I think we should set aside, and this is the difficulty in trying to address an element of the land use, the comprehensive plan, prematurely, because we don't have the sewer and water, we don't have the utilities, we don't have mobility, we don't have conservation elements even discussed to this level. And so there's gaping holes, and that's reflective of the fact that we're discussing an element probably a little prematurely. And some of these things happen. Let's not get bogged down. Let's just set it aside. When we answer those questions, we can come back to it.
So yeah, let's do that.
We're going to revisit this.
Yeah.
We'll just
leave
we'll
it
in
for
now.
Regardless of the reason, let's just
leave it in for now. Okay. The last goal had to do with the agricultural land base. First one. This ties back to what we talked about last week: establishing a voluntary agribusiness zoning district around existing infrastructure and AR1 zoning in Western Sussex that includes regulations that make it easier to operate livestock, poultry, and agricultural processing operations.
Comma and technology operations.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't. Is the word easier or more predictable? I don't know what where in the second line
makes it easier to operate.
Maybe easier and predictable to operate lives.
Okay.
I don't know. Just think of
actually,
through.
It makes it possible.
Permittable.
Yeah.
Permittable. Because right now you can't do those things without some kind of zoning change or conditional use or something.
So permittable or possible? What's
permittable.
The word choice? Permittable.
Permittable is a more official word.
And I thought we had named that ag industrial zones, but
I actually think agribusiness is
suitable.
Is more warm and fuzzy than agricultural industrial.
I like warm and fuzzy. Yeah.
I've heard that about you.
Yeah. Sit on it. Yeah.
All right, next one. Encourage more farm owners to enroll in a voluntary state ag preservation district and sell farm development rights to the state.
Why wouldn't we just say enroll in a voluntary state agricultural preservation district or similar program, period?
Take the development rights off?
Yeah, because it can be.
It may take a different form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or similar program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Next one. So this came from the focus groups, encourage reinstatement of the county's contribution to the state farmland preservation program.
I'm going to defer to our resident farmer over here and tell us how that works in real life, Mr. Ross.
It worked very well for a while until the budget busted in 2009. I would rather just put an asterisk next to this when we get done the conservation and we'll have clarity on what direction we want to take there. We can come back and look at this. I know the budgetary issues are very tight, but in my limited time, we've had tight budgets every year for the last, 100 or so, and I'm not that old. But whenever we've offered matching fund money for ag land preservation, it's always been matched. Now, we've always had to give them due notice so that the budget writers could get it in. But I've been told straight up, point blank, by budget writers that 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 million out of a $4 billion budget isn't a big deal. You know, you give me 20 or 30 of those and that's a big deal. So I think that, matching the program makes sense, but let's put off the conversation until we get done the conservation element.
Okay. The last one also came from the focus group. Continue supporting and promoting the Forest Legacy Program and other programs that sustain and protect working forests.
Good.
Do we promote that now? I mean, as a county? As
she said, continue.
I know. That's what I was wondering. Do we know that we actually do that?
I don't know. I mean, we have...
As
a county, I don't know, to be honest with you.
Who would know?
You would think I would know. I mean, I'll
get people. Nobody in this room knows, and I suspect we're not doing it. So
just take off continue and just say support and promote?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Whose program is it, the Forest Legacy Program?
USDA.
USDA.
The Forest Service.
When there's matching grant programs that aren't directly linked through NRCS.
Yeah, and that's what the other, the line about and other programs.
Yeah, that's cool.
Okay. Okay, so those are just proposed strategies. Are there other strategies for future land use that you want to see?
Mr. Andrew talked this morning about these technology centers, and the ag business zoning that we're talking about are going to be relatively few, but Mr. Andrew has a lot more opportunity than just those 2, 3, 4 agribusiness districts that we might develop. So I think we need to think about some language which would open a door to allowing those technology centers to locate in the vicinity of the Delaware Electric Cooperative's infrastructure support system.
I think we have to be careful about making reference to any specific company.
True.
I think we can just describe the characteristics, and it'll become obvious, you know, that way. And it is interesting, though, that when you think about these technology centers, they require exactly the same thing that agribusiness operations require. It's the exact same thing. They need low-cost power. They need high-speed internet. They need to be in a rural area away from major roadways and traffic for security reasons. It's all the stuff, now the agribusiness has to be away from major roadways and so on for other reasons, because they need to be near the croplands that they're serving. So for a different reason, but it's the same set of requirements in both instances. So I think it's definitely a compatible, item should be permitted in the agribusiness zone for that reason.
So I think we modified the language of that first bullet, I think, per your instruction, Mr. Wheatley, about technology operations.
To put agricultural processing, technology operations.
Yep, I've got it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the only thing we have to be careful of is, do you want an A-B zone, dotted, all over the county? I mean, A-B zonings to support value-added agriculture might be a pretty significant landmass, 200 or 300 acres, whereas an A-B zone for this additional purpose might only be 15 acres. So I don't know how that.
I'm not sure either, and I'm not sure that we need to figure that out now. But here again, this is another instance where the implementation is going to be very critical, and it's something that ordinances can originate here too.
So how big a site is the
producer
site in Delmar?
We could take this up,
hand
it up to.
Off the top of my head, I don't know. I know there are certain portions of it that we've reviewed, and some of them are like 30, 40 acres, but the overall entire acreage, I would have to look into.
Is that in the town of Delmar?
I'm sorry, what was your question?
The AgriCycle?
No, the Purdue.
I didn't think it was in the town limits, but it is.
Delmarva Aluminum?
It is in the town limits.
So it doesn't matter. I was just curious.
It doesn't matter then.
It could be still serviced by it, because that's a similar type business that we're talking about. Their agribusiness division is huge, and I don't know how many people they have working in that particular building in Salisbury, but it's probably over 100. And And they're internet and phone. I mean, that's all they do. They sit there with a headset on, and they're doing contracts all over the world. And internet and phone is absolutely, you know, without it, they're dead. You know, they have to have it. And that's the type of business we're talking about that supports ag. You know.
Other strategies that you'd like to see under this chapter? And like, you know, like we said, this is just the first pass at it. We'll be coming back to talk about future land use later, but this is just to get everyone thinking about it.
I think it'd be helpful right to see what we've got so far, and that'll probably...
I got to flesh all these out with all these changes.
Yeah, no, right, mm-hmm. And then we'll be... Right, when you do
we'll
that...
We'll see where the holes are still.
Yeah, see where the holes are. Mm-hmm. That
seems to me. I have a big one.
Sure.
The administrator and the engineering department are working on the spray-on-demand option. So we are in the wastewater business. That's our biggest business. And agriculture is in the irrigation business. And if you put the two together and you have spray-on-demand, that's when you have synergy. And I think if we really want to support agriculture, then that would give agriculture a revenue stream and allow us to promote something the state of Delaware has always attempted to achieve and never yet has really succeeded in a spray-on-demand distribution. We're in the process of trying to establish it in the Inland Bays area. But we need to have active agriculture in proximity of land-based wastewater applications.
So are you suggesting maybe a strategy would be to explore the
concept of spray on demand
in that goal, because that would definitely make, if we can strike,
or an economic development,
either one,
there's going to be both.
Both,
yeah,
could
it's
be
an
in both.
Overlap. We have an but ag goal
but
there
that's,
too.
I mean, there are people for whom that would be a natural. If you had somebody who, I don't know, maybe had a turf farm or something, might be a, you know, or something like that. But really, any kind of agricultural operation mm-hmm. could use that.
It'd be interesting.
Yeah, I got a note that people aren't hearing you. So
that's a great idea.
Okay.
Yeah, let's have.
Okay, let's put that in there. Others.
Note that that also goes to economic development and also the wastewater element.
Yep.
Yeah, I think as we go through, we're going to see some of these goals and
overlap.
Strategies overlapping to different chapters as again, a lot of things do in the comprehensive plan.
Sure.
You know, that could also be you know, a conservation incentive type program.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Because instead of buying land, you make a deal with a farmer who's farming the land to keep it in farming, but accept this benefit of spray on demand.
Okay, other strategies?
I'm thinking about blessings blend.
Don't think about it.
And again, if you come up with other ones, email me.
I understand. That this isn't our last shot
the tip
at this.
Of the
okay, this is our first shot mm-hmm. at this, and I do want to acknowledge Mr. Ross's comments. It, in some respects, may have been a shade premature, but. I had asked to have it on because I think we need to start talking about it, but we're certainly not going to finish talking about it today.
Sure.
But we are getting started. So, okay.
Okay, so that's it for the PowerPoint. The next thing we had planned to do is we can look at the maps that we have and
start. Alexis, one
sure.
more thing on the PowerPoint.
Yeah.
When can you make that available to us?
I think Janelle's going to post it by the end of the week.
It should be
perfect.
On the comp plan website.
Yeah.
If not
those
tomorrow,
strategies.
It'll be on Friday.
Yeah.
It should all be in there. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So
study to your heart's content.
Okay. All right. So we have a map that we can look at today. We'll pull it up here. And I think at this point today, we're just going to be looking at a high level, getting your feedback in areas where you want us to look a little more closely. We just want feedback from you on what you're seeing come through the Planning and Zoning Commission in terms of development trends, maybe areas in the county where you might see future growth and changes to future land use categories. So we have